Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
A former foreign minister becomes interim president of Burkina Faso. Another doctor dies of Ebola. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. Authorities in Burkina Faso have named former foreign minister Michel Kafando as the country's interim president. A committee of politicians, army representatives, and civil and religious leaders announced the selection of Mr. Kafando today. Opposition leader Zéphirine Diabré described the choice as consensual. Mr. Kafando will next appoint a prime minister who will name an interim government. Addressing reporters Monday, the new president said his government will do all it can to bring about a successful transition to civilian rule. The Nebraska Medical Center says a doctor from Sierra Leone has died of Ebola. The hospital released a statement today saying Martin Salia died as the result of advanced symptoms of the disease. He was the third Ebola patient to be treated at the hospital and the second person to die of the disease in the United States. The country hardest hit by Ebola, Liberia, has set a national goal of recording no new cases by Christmas, December 25th. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf said in a nationwide radio address on Sunday that her country's path to recovery will be difficult. She said Liberia's health care system must be better prepared for any future disease epidemic. On Sunday, U.S. health officials said travelers from Mali will be subject to the same screening and monitoring as people arriving from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. That includes taking arriving travelers' temperatures and questioning them about their health. This is VOA News. The AFP news service quotes Somali police as saying at least two people were killed today in the town of Baidoa when political demonstrations turned violent. Demonstrators were trying to prevent an election for governor of Southwest State. The crowd reportedly began burning tires, firing guns, and attacking vehicles. African Union troops managed to protect voting areas, and officials announced that former National Parliament Speaker Sharif Hassan Sheikh Adan was elected to the office. The Associated Press reports Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika has made an appearance on television. He appeared Sunday night on television greeting a number of foreign ambassadors while sitting in a wheelchair. It was his first appearance since spending 3 days at a French clinic where he was treated for an undisclosed condition. Zimbabwe Vice President Joyce Mujuru says she plans to defend herself in court, if necessary, against accusations that she is involved in a plot to kill President Robert Mugabe. That accusation was carried in a Sunday Mail newspaper report. The state-run newspaper charged that Mujuru has connections to a plot to kill the 90-year-old president. Mujuru said she denies all allegations of treason, corruption, incompetence, and misuse of public office against her that have been carried recently in two newspapers. The Reuters news agency says Sudan is again refusing to allow investigators from the United Nations and the African Union to look into reports of mass rape in a Darfur village. Sudanese officials deny that the rapes occurred in the village of Tabit and say they are skeptical of the motives of the joint peacekeeping mission known as UNAMID. Earlier media reports had said Sudanese soldiers had raped about 200 women and girls in the village. Reuters reports nearly 1,000 people, mostly women, demonstrated today in Nairobi against a recent series of attacks on women. In the attacks, women are stripped of their clothing and beaten by mobs by men for wearing wearing clothing deemed immodest by the attackers. A march organizer said she knows of 10 such attacks across Kenya. Reuters reports that South Africa's main opposition party is calling on authorities to charge a government minister and the police with assault amid a controversy over a brawl that broke out Thursday in Parliament. The violence erupted while the chamber was debating corruption charges against President Jacob Zuma. Police were called to end the melee. Some lawmakers have accused the police and the Deputy Minister for Higher Education and Training of assaulting opposition parliamentarians. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
Somalia's political crisis is growing, with 14 ministers asking the Prime Minister to resign due to his political rift with the President. The standoff between these two men has paralyzed the government for the last couple of months.
That's Abdelaziz Billo reporting from Mogadishu. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, tensions are high in Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa after police stormed two mosques controlled by radical youths. The Nebraska Medical Center says the doctor from Sierra Leone it was treating for Ebola has died. And Nigeria's military says it has retaken the town of Chibok from Boko Haram militants who stormed it last week. We'll have these stories plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Uganda, and our feature reports. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, tensions are high in Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa after police stormed two mosques controlled by radical youths. One person was killed and more than 200 young men were arrested in security sweeps in the neighborhood of Majengo. Security officials say they have recovered weapons and grenades. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
In a dawn raid, Kenyan police stormed the Musa and Sakina Mosque when worshippers were performing morning prayers. Security officials say one person was killed in the crackdown at the Musa Mosque. According to Mombasa Police Officer Geoffrey Mayek, the storming of the mosque was prompted by reports that weapons were stored in the mosque and youths were planning terror attacks.
We have been receiving information that there are a number of firearms and grenades which are hidden inside the Sakina Mosque and Musa Mosque. So we planned for an operation last night. In Sakina Mosque, we recovered three hand grenades and one pistol with six rounds of ammunition. Musa Mosque recovered five grenades and some hangers and knives.
Mayek also says they have arrested 251 youths and the investigation is ongoing. Mombasa Deputy County Commissioner Mahmoud Salim has called on the Muslim community to take charge of the two mosques, where the previous leaders were all driven out by the youths.
Misikiti ina sheria yake, ina wanakamati, ina wadhamini. Lakini misikiti hiyo miwili ni kama imepoteza mwelekeo.
A mosque has its own rules and laws and it has committee members. But these two mosques have all lost direction. We want the Muslim community to sit down and tell us the way forward. But when we hear people committing crimes, when you are told someone is passing there and has a gun, tell me, how are you going to wait? Security forces first stormed Musa Mosque in February of this year. In that raid, they recovered weapons, knives and video discs and flags, which bore the symbols of Somali militant group Al-Shabaab. Authorities have accused clerics in these two mosques of radicalising the youths in the run-down neighbourhood of Majengo. Security analyst Andrew Franklin tells VOA that Kenya's security agencies repeatedly use the same tactics to crack down on people it perceives to be terrorists, but the problems remain.
The problem continues to come back in much more serious forms, and there seems to be no intelligence going to the police. It just seems to be a situation where you continually round up youths. That plus the extrajudicial killings of so-called radical preachers and imams. There are a whole host of unsolved gun and grenade attacks, and it seems to be just a general groundswell of opinion, of anti-government opinion.
Dozens of Muslim clerics, both radical and moderate, have been killed in the streets of Mombasa over the past few years. Since the death of radical Kenyan cleric Sheikh Abubakar Sharif, also known as Makaburi, the radical youths have lacked a vocal supporter or leader, and much of the activities have gone underground. In the last 6 months, the radical youths have decided not to speak to the media, but to operate in groups to carry out attacks against people. They perceive to work with the government in providing information, as well as security forces and moderate clerics. Police say there has been an increase in gun and knife attacks in the streets of Mombasa, targeting innocent people by the radical youths. Earlier this month, Sheikh Salim Bakari Mwarangi, who supported the effort to stamp out radicalism in the restive coastal region, was shot dead by unknown assailants. In June, the chairman of the Council of Imams and Preachers and Sakina Mosque preacher Sheikh Mohammed Idris was killed by a known gunman near his home. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Somalia's political crisis is growing, with 14 ministers asking the prime minister to resign due to his intense political rift with the president. The standoff between the two men has paralyzed the government for the last couple of months. Abdelaziz Billo has more from Mogadishu.
More than half of Somali cabinet ministers have joined calls seeking the immediate resignation of Prime Minister Abdiweli Sheikh Ahmed to end the political stalemate with the president. At issues are disagreements over political appointments, which has also divided parliament. In the past week, lawmakers failed twice to bring a no-confidence motion in the prime minister to a vote in what turned into a raucous session where debate had to be suspended. MP Abdurrahman Hosh Jibril says a small number of lawmakers should not be able to disrupt the work of parliament. He says it is unacceptable for 40 MPs to disrupt a session where more than 220 MPs are meeting. He says if the Speaker of Parliament is unable to handle the House, then as MPs they will seek his resignation. Meanwhile, lawmakers from both camps have been meeting in Mogadishu hotels on ways to break the impasse. MP Abdi Barre, who supports the Prime Minister, insists that the no-confidence motion is unconstitutional and his colleagues will block the vote at all costs. He says we are blocking the motion because it was politically motivated and never emanated from the floor of the House. Therefore, it is unconstitutional. It has been less than a year since lawmakers ousted Prime Minister Abdi Farah Shirton in a similar manner. Tension between President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud and the current Prime Minister has sparked international concern that Somalia could slide back into political turmoil, slowing progress towards stabilizing the war-torn country. The United Nations has led international efforts to create a stable central government in the country after more than two decades of violence and chaos and an insurgency by militant group Al-Shabaab. The UN Special Envoy to Somalia, Nicholas Kay, offered to help Somali leaders reach a mutually satisfactory compromise. He also expressed concern about reported vote buying in the political standoff and warned that any action by any party that creates political turmoil will be reported to the United Nations Security Council. President Mohamud called on the international community to respect the sovereignty of Somalia, saying a Somali-led process is the only way to end the current political crisis. Abdulaziz Bilal for VOA News, Mogadishu.
Military and civilian leaders in Burkina Faso chose former Foreign Minister Michel Kafando to serve as interim president. The decision was made in the early morning hours today. Kafando was picked over four other candidates. He will name a prime minister and a 25-member government that are to serve until a scheduled national election in 12 months. The military forced the resignation of longtime President Blaise Compaoré 2 weeks ago during popular protests. Compaoré fled the country as Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida took over the government. The African Union threatened sanctions against the military rulers and gave them 2 weeks to set up a civilian government. Fourteen minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. A U.S. hospital caring for a surgeon from Sierra Leone who was infected with the Ebola virus announced that Dr. Martin Salia died today as a result of the disease. Salia was evacuated by air from Kissi United Methodist Hospital in Sierra Leone on Saturday. The Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha is one of four U.S. hospitals equipped with a biocontainment unit to handle dangerous viral infections. Salia was a citizen of Sierra Leone and a permanent resident of the U.S. state of Maryland. More than 5,000 people have died of the virus. Most of the deaths have occurred in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. Salia was working in Freetown, the capital of Sierra Leone. Passengers from those three countries must be medically screened for Ebola when entering any of five major U.S. airports. The U.S. government today added Mali to the list after expressing concern about a cluster of Ebola infections being reported there. Mali was declared Ebola-free last Tuesday after the death of a two-year-old child weeks ago. But the country is facing new difficulties containing the virus. The United Nations has canceled a contract with a Bamako hospital that cares for peacekeepers after a nurse at the prestigious Pasteur Clinic died of the virus. Health officials have traced her case to an imam who suffered renal failure and died 3 weeks ago. Health officials now say he died of Ebola, and they are now looking for more than 400 possible contacts. World Health Organization Mali representative Ibrahima Fall said the clinic made a serious mistake. In Guinea, that country's Ebola crisis manager, Dr. Marcel Ruta Singwa, has died. The health minister of the DRC announced on Saturday that the outbreak of a different strain of the Ebola virus is over. 49 people died in that country. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 16 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Tensions are high in Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa after police stormed two mosques controlled by radical youths. The Nebraska Medical Center says the doctor from Sierra Leone it was treating for Ebola has died. Nigeria's military says it has retaken the town of Chibok from Boko Haram militants who stormed it last week. And of course, we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237. Well, complications from preterm births now outrank all other causes of death for young children. Of the more than 6.3 million deaths of kids under age 5 in 2013, more than 1 million resulted from preterm problems. The study was released November 17th, today, World Prematurity Day. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The study appears in the Lancet Medical Journal. It's a collaborative effort by researchers from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and the World Health Organization. The vast majority of the deaths from direct complications of preterm births occurred within the first 28 days of life, with an additional 125,000 deaths occurring between 1 month and 5 years. Dr. Andreas DeFrancisco is interim director of the Geneva-based Partnership for Maternal Newborn and Child Health.
Over the last few years, the proportion of deaths due to preterm births has been increasing. The reason for this is that we do not really have major interventions in place to avoid premature births, and second, to manage them in most communities where they occur.
He says preterm birth complications are a worldwide problem.
We have countries in Africa, for example, Nigeria, or in Asia, India and Pakistan, that have extremely high numbers of kids that are dying related to preterm births. But this is not only a problem in developing countries, this is also a problem that affects developed countries as well.
India actually tops the list, followed by Nigeria, Pakistan, the DRC, China, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Ethiopia, Angola, and Kenya. Researchers warn the Ebola outbreak in West Africa raises the risk of preterm complications in the affected countries. The rise in deaths from preterm birth complications actually coincides with a dramatic decline in the worldwide mortality rate of children under five.
Mortality has been reducing by about 3.9% per year, which is a very impressive reduction of mortality and is due to a lot of the interventions that we have in stock including decreasing the mortality due to infectious diseases such as pneumonia and diarrhea, malaria, among others.
Some of the interventions credited for the mortality rate decline include vaccines, bed nets, antibiotics, anti-malarial and HIV treatments. But Dr. DeFrancisco says the mortality rate for premature babies has decreased by a much smaller rate of 2% a year. A big part of the reason, he says, is a lack of adequate interventions. And right now, it's not clear what the best interventions are, aside from addressing obesity and high blood pressure or hypertension. The study says, for the most part, it's not fully known what triggers preterm labor, and about half of preterm births occur spontaneously.
This cause of mortality needs to be studied much more specifically and in a much more focused way, because if we don't have the causes, if we don't have the factors, pregnancy is going to end in a premature birth, and this needs to be the focus of intensive research.
Some $250 million worth of intensive research is getting underway through four major initiatives: the Global Coalition to Advance Preterm Birth Research, the March of Dimes, the University of California at San Francisco's Preterm Birth Initiative, and the Global Alliance to Prevent Prematurity and Stillbirth.
If we are able to support these research programs within the next 5 years or so, we will be able to have interventions that are going to contribute to the reduction of mortality in these very small babies.
Researchers also will study poverty, nutrition, pollution, and stress. And they'll try to solve a mystery. Why do Somali women living in the United States have very low rates of premature births, while most black women in the U.S. have very high rates? Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Nigeria's military says it has retaken the town of Chibok from Boko Haram militants who stormed it last week. Earlier this week, the militants kidnapped more than 200 schoolgirls who remain missing 7 months later. Chris Stein has more from Abuja.
Just days after Boko Haram insurgents overran Nigeria's military and local vigilantes to take the town of Chibok, Army spokesman Brigadier General Olajide Lale said Nigeria's armed forces have retaken the town.
Chibok was recaptured by forces, the armed forces of Nigeria, around 6:30 on Saturday evening. That is 18:30 hours Saturday, and by Sunday morning, the town was completely clear of all insurgents.
For months, Boko Haram fighters have been taking territory in Nigeria's northeast, including in Borno State, where Chibok is located. They raided the town earlier this year, kidnapping about 220 schoolgirls in a mass abduction that brought international condemnation on the group. Ayuba Chibok is an elder in Chibok, but wasn't in the town when it was taken. People he's spoken to described running in terror as Boko Haram arrived.
Also, it was very, very tense. They came in number. There were a lot of them who came to Chibok. Some are using motorbike. Some are on these hillock vans with guns mounted on top of the hillocks. So they were shooting randomly everywhere. But, you know, since Chibok has experienced this attack in the past, so once people hear the sound of one or two vehicles coming, you know, people are always alert. That's what helped them. Most people were able to escape.
Fleeing villagers spent days in the bush before they could reach neighboring towns. Some remain missing and unreachable because most cell phone networks in the area are down. Meanwhile, Ayuba Chibok says militants were torching churches in the town. He fears many people are dead.
Nobody will be able to tell exact number of people that might have been killed or wounded. Them that were there, they were just busy trying to escape to save their life. But I'm sure, as it used to be, this place, Boko Haram State, they used to get some unkilled.
General Lale had no estimates on the number of casualties in the town, but said it did not sustain much damage during the weekend shootout. Separately, a bomb planted in a market in the town of Azare in nearby Bauchi State killed 13 people on Sunday. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
The World Health Organization reports that drowning is among the 10 leading causes of death for children and young people. WHO's first ever global report on drowning highlights measures that individuals, communities, and nations can take to prevent the vast majority of drowning deaths that occur each year. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Authors of this global report call drowning the biggest epidemic of which no one has ever heard. And this appears to be borne out by the steady stream of unnerving statistics presented in this study. The World Health Organization reports every year 372,000 people lose their lives from drowning, and 90% of these deaths occur in low- and middle-income countries. The highest rates are in the African, Southeast Asia, and Western Pacific regions. The data show more than half of all drowning deaths happen to those under age 25, with the highest rates among children under 5 years of age. It finds males are twice as likely to drown as females. Dr. Etienne Krug is WHO Director for the Department for Management of Noncommunicable Diseases, Disability, Violence, and Injury Prevention. He says every hour of every day, more than 40 people drown in circumstances both mundane and catastrophic.
These are often children in bathtubs or in watering holes and rivers, fishermen doing their daily work that are carried out at sea, migrants looking for a better life but losing it in perilous crossings, and capsized ferries, which result also in the drowning of scores of passengers in one time.
WHO scientist and lead author of the report, David Meddings, notes that people in poorer countries often encounter water in more dangerous circumstances.
In most high-income settings, when we talk about interacting with water, it's almost always on a recreational basis. We go to bodies of water to swim at a lake. We jump in a pool to cool off on a hot summer day. The reality for many populations, particularly those in rural parts of low- and middle-income countries, is a very, very different relationship with water. They need water for household chores, for cooking, for washing, for bathing. They need water frequently to make their employment in the act of, you know, small-scale fisheries, etc.
Meddings notes that long-term trends show drowning rates have dropped dramatically in rich countries over the past 70 to 80 years. This is due to factors such as better emergency care and people having water piped into their homes instead of having to use a lake or river. WHO urges communities and governments to put in place a number of simple low-cost measures that it says would save many lives from drowning. These include installing barriers to control access to water, providing safe places such as daycare centers for children, teaching children basic swimming skills, and training bystanders in safe rescue and resuscitation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and it's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America. This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello. I want to take a few moments to speak directly to you, the people of West Africa. On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your governments to help stop this disease. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives. and our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Tensions are high in Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa after police stormed two mosques controlled by radical youths. The Nebraska Medical Center says the doctor from Sierra Leone it was treating for Ebola has died. And Nigeria's military says it has retaken the town of Chibok from Boko Haram militants who stormed it last week. Coming up, we'll have music from Uganda and our feature reports. I'm Kim Lewis, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. Happy Monday, Sunny.
Happy Monday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you have lots of Nations Cup football news for us today.
Kim, the final round of qualifying matches for the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Equatorial Guinea will be played Wednesday all across the continent. At stake are the final six places in African football's premier competition. 10 teams officially booked their tickets over the weekend. As we hear now from our Nightline Africa sportsman, Shagun Dot on the spot at Adeyemi.
Good evening, Africa. With the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations hosting issues now resolved, 10 teams have qualified for the finals of the tournament. Shortly before the kickoff of the penultimate round of qualifying matches, African soccer's governing body, CAF, announced Equatorial Guinea as the host of the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations finals. Earlier disqualified from the playoffs for fielding an ineligible player, Equatorial Guinea replaces Morocco, which refused to host the 2015 tournament over Ebola fears. By virtue of being host, Equatorial Guinea qualifies automatically for the finals. It will be joined by South Africa, Algeria, Gabon, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Cape Verde, Zambia, Tunisia, and Senegal. All the teams pick the tickets before the final round of qualifying matches due to be played on Wednesday. Let's quickly run through how the teams qualified. South Africa becomes the first and only team to have qualified from Group A after beating hard-fighting Sudan 2-1 on Saturday to amass an unassailable 11 points. Algeria is also the only team to have so far qualified from Group B after beating Ethiopia 3-1 on Saturday. The Algerians picked the ticket with 15 points, with one match to play. The top two teams from Group C have already emerged. They are Gabon and Burkina Faso. Burkina Faso beat Lesotho 1-0, while Angola and Gabon played goalless. Cameroon is the only team to have emerged from Group D. The indomitable Lions beat their counterparts from the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DR Congo, 1-0 on Saturday to raise their total points to 13. There are no qualifiers yet from Group E. Cape Verde and Zambia picked the two tickets from Group F. Zambia beat Mozambique 1-0, while Cape Verde trounced Niger 3-1. Also, two teams, Tunisia and Senegal, emerged from Group G. Tunisia played goalless with Botswana on Friday, while Senegal pipped Egypt 1-0. Now, the full results of weekend matches at a glance. Group A, South Africa 2, Sudan 1, Congo 0, Nigeria 2. Group B, Malawi 2, Mali 0, Algeria 3, Ethiopia 1. Group C, Lesotho 0, Burkina Faso 1, Angola 0, Gabon 0. Group D, Sierra Leone 1, Ivory Coast 5, Cameroon 1, DR Congo 0. Group E, Uganda 1, Ghana 0, Togo 1, Guinea 4. Group F, Mozambique 0, Zambia 1, Cape Verde 3, Niger 1. And Group G, Botswana 0, Tunisia 0, Egypt 0, Senegal 1. As I reported earlier, the final set of group qualifying matches will be played across the continent on Wednesday, after which the remaining six finalists will emerge. Here are the fixtures. Group A, Nigeria hosts South Africa. Congo travels to Sudan. Group B, Mali plays host to Algeria. Ethiopia is at home to Malawi. Group C, Burkina Faso hosts Angola. Gabon hosts Lesotho. Group D, Ivory Coast takes on visiting Cameroon, while DR Congo hosts Sierra Leone. Group E, it's Ghana at home to Togo and Guinea at home to Uganda. Group F, Cape Verde travels to Zambia, while Mozambique goes to Niger. And Group G, Tunisia hosts Egypt in a clash of North Africans, while Senegal hosts Botswana. Let's remind our listeners that the finals of the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations will be played from January 17th to February 8th in four cities in Equatorial Guinea. Back here in Nigeria, President Goodluck Jonathan has congratulated the country's national football team, the Super Eagles, for their, quote, dogged and hard-fought victory, unquote, over the Red Devils of Congo on Saturday. The victory has revived Nigeria's hopes of qualifying for next year's Africa Cup of Nations finals. A presidency statement said President Jonathan applauds the Super Eagles' patriotic, determined, and very courageous display in front of a very vociferous, aggressive and partisan home crowd, which earned them an emphatic 2-0 victory and placed Nigeria in good position once again for qualification to defend its African title. The president assured the Super Eagles and their handlers of his government's full support for the final qualification match against South Africa on Wednesday. Nigeria's chances of getting an automatic ticket to the 2015 finals have brightened with the victory over Congo. The victory means that the Super Eagles will get a ticket by beating South Africa on Wednesday because they have now scored more goals than Congo in their two meetings. Ever-reliable goalkeeper Vincent Nyama, who stopped a Congo penalty, as well as Ike Uchi and Aaron Samuel, who scored Nigeria's two goals, are the heroes of the match. Meanwhile, a Nigerian sports analyst has called on CAF to severely punish Morocco for its failure to host the 2015 African Nations Cup Finals. Segun Aribike is a former editor-in-chief of the news agency of Nigeria. He says Ebola fears are not enough to justify Morocco's refusal to host the tournament.
At any rate, don't forget that the countries that where you have the Ebola crisis, the three countries, Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone, have been playing their matches outside of their nations. So what is the problem? At any rate, and I also know that as we speak, the Guineans play their matches in Morocco. They never complain about that. If I may add too, I think CAF should seriously do something about this situation. They need to be punished. It's a shame. If the Equatorial Guineans were not readily available, they will not have the championship. You know what you will have done to a generation of African footballers who probably will be playing for the first time or probably the last tournament. I think the Moroccans, there must be more to it. I don't know, but that's why I think CAF should investigate this and punish them more. It's not enough to say they have been thrown out of next year's tournament.
That was Segun Aribike, a former editor-in-chief of the news agency of Nigeria. Thanks so much for listening. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Segun Adeyemi in Lagos.
The Voice of America.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Hello. I want to take a few moments to speak directly to you, the people of West Africa. On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your governments to help stop this disease. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives, and our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Turning to tennis, Serbian star Novak Djokovic won the year-end ATP Finals in London by walkover after his Swiss rival Roger Federer pulled out of the final with a back injury. It was a disappointing way to end the indoor competition in the British capital. Reporter Chris Bowers tells us more from London.
Sometimes you're just unlucky, and this tournament has probably been the unluckiest of the tennis year. 10 of the 12 group matches were won in straight sets, and while you could put a couple of them down to all-time greats playing the best tennis, they were largely disappointing contests. Then we had the great Federer-Wawrinka semi-final that brought the tournament to light, but it left a terrible legacy. Roger Federer woke up on Sunday morning with a back problem that failed to respond to treatment and painkillers, and 45 minutes before the Swiss was due to face Novak Djokovic in the final, he announced to the crowd that he couldn't take to the court.
And I was feeling great until yesterday's tiebreaker. I felt all of a sudden my back was playing funny, and then I tried to have treatment on it, medication on it. I just tried to turn around as quick as possible, really. But I didn't feel that much of an improvement overnight, and I don't have a day off or anything to work with. Obviously, it's not enough time to recover. The way I feel right now, there's no way I can compete at any level, really.
It's an anticlimactic way for Djokovic to make history, the Serb becoming the first man since Ivan Lendl in the mid-1980s to win this title three times in a row.
It was the last match of the season. I was ready to give it all, and I'm sure he was ready to give it all if he could. I spoke to him, and as I understand, he gave up, retired a match maybe, three times in his career in over 1,000 matches, so... You know, you cannot blame him, and I'm sure that he would play World Tour Finals if he could. This is probably the first time in the history that this happens, and it's a very awkward situation to talk about it, to be honest, today.
Andy Murray stepped in to play an exhibition set against Djokovic, while Federer retreated to nurse his back, hoping it'll be fit for him to play for Switzerland in the Davis Cup final, which starts in France on Friday. Chris Bowers for VOA Sports, London.
Thanks, Chris. For the third time in his great career, Novak Djokovic ends the year as the world's top-ranked tennis player. In the ATP rankings released Monday, Djokovic has 11,510 points. Roger Federer ends 2014 ranked second in the world. He has 9,700 points. And as Chris Bowers mentioned, we'll have to wait and see now if Federer will play for Switzerland in the Davis Cup final, which begins in France on Friday. Follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page today, Monday, you'll see a photo of me with my friend, Segun Dot on the Spot Adeyemi, who gave us that comprehensive Nations Cup report earlier in the show. It was good to see Segun last month in Lagos during my trip to Nigeria. And just a reminder, Nigeria's Super Eagles will host Bafana Bafana of South Africa on Wednesday at the new stadium in Uyo, Akwa Ibom State. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Kim Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America. Well, coming up, Cuban doctors were the first to go to Guinea to fight the Ebola virus. And a 24-year-old technology innovator in Nairobi invents a tracking device that locates stolen cars. First, let's listen to a little music. Here's Stella Nanteza of Uganda with Majangwa.
Yesu
kutwaweba
kero munonye
nabarije
amatika mwekusanze
gakatwaro nyo
majambo
shalawaero
che yesu
utwawewa
kero mononye
nabarinje
amatika mwefu sanze
gata shwana nyo
majangwa
shaolwa ero
ukedote mia mkujukira mienku gamba mkujukira mwa jema nova kukatonda wo sogo ni jama jangwa olisanga wachitange what was it on da majangwa
salawol walero
ibigambo bien kugamba
ya muwendo nyo
we mwache yesu
we twa wewa
kero mononye
labarize
amatika mwefu sanze
kakachwano nyo
majangwa
salawol walero.
Jangwa, that's Stella Nansenza. Well, the first batch of Cuban doctors who came to Guinea to fight the Ebola virus are epidemiologists who are establishing testing labs in various hot zones. More than 450 Cuban health workers are expected to serve the three West African countries in the coming months. Karim Kamara reports from Conakry on the work of this first batch of Cuban health workers.
This first contingent of Cuban doctors is comprised mainly of epidemiologists who are establishing testing laboratories in various hot zones. The arrival comes as Guinea is experiencing a surge in Ebola cases after briefly starting to get the virus under control back in August. Guinea has reported more than 1,500 cases and more than 800 deaths since the West African outbreak began in Guinea in December. Guinea Foreign Minister Francois Luceni Fall says the presence of the Cuban medical staff is boosting confidence that the country will begin to win the battle against Ebola.
Nous savons que Cuba a toujours été à nos côtés. Aujourd'hui encore, nous avons besoin de nos frères cubains. La Guinée est confrontée.
He says Cuba's friendship in Guinea's time of need is noted, and expertise and commitment is essential to control one of the biggest health threats today. Guinea is battling a shortage of trained medical personnel. President Alpha Conde has trapped retired doctors to volunteer or face consequences. Scores of healthcare workers have also died fighting Ebola in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, the three hardest hit countries. So the arrival of foreign doctors is a relief here. Head of the Cuban medical delegation, Dr. Graciliano Jazz Bartolo, says one of his team's priority is to stop the chain of contamination and accurately establish how many Ebola cases there are.
Tous les Québécois sont là et ils sont venus pour travailler pour faire sortir l'épidémie rapidement.
He says Cuban doctors are here in Guinea to help eradicate Ebola quickly and are eager to work with their sister country, Guinea. He called on Guineans to remain calm and overcome their fears and suspicions of seeking treatment at hospitals and medical facilities. In the past week, one Ebola patient from Kankan jumped out of an ambulance on the way to a treatment center in Gegedu and died. This is one of many examples showing how fearful many Guineans remain mount into the information awareness campaign. Meanwhile, the United States Ambassador to United Nations, Samata Power, arrived in Guinea Sunday to underscore the American commitment to helping eradicate Ebola in West Africa. The United States has had several cases of Ebola, mostly medical personnel. Mali reported its first case last week. The United States has pledged $350 million in assistance and is sending some 4,000 troops to help build treatment centers and provide logistical support for tracing Ebola contamination, a key to halting the spread of the virus. After meeting with President Alpha Conde, Power underscored that Ebola is not an African problem, but a global one that requires intensive international action. The World Health Organization says if that action isn't mobilized more quickly, there could be up to 10,000 new cases each week by the end of this year. Karim Kamara for VOA News, Conakry.
A 24-year-old technology innovator in Nairobi has invented a tracking device that locates stolen cars, monitors and secures cars. Kelvin Mucharia says he came up with a robust audiovisual surveillance system. But can it find the 10 cars that are stolen every day in this city? As Lenny Rubaga reports from the Kenyan capital, Kelvin's innovations might offer car security.
This is Nairobi, the capital of East Africa's largest economy. But beneath the glitz and glamour of a growing economy lies an uncomfortable truth. Crime here has been rising at an alarming rate. A new report by the Nairobi Metropolitan Crime Observatory notes that carjacking is on the rise, with an average of 10 cars stolen each day. Meet 24-year-old Kelvin Macharia, an innovator who not only identified the problem, but saw an opportunity. Macharia is now the CEO at Sunrise Tracking, offering security solutions. In 2012, with just $300 from his savings, he improved upon a tracking device to alert car owners to the location of their vehicles from the comfort of their computer desktops or mobile phones.
It also acts as a security measure, whereby in case there's theft, you can always be able to recover the vehicle by the help of your handset.
Kelvin's is a story of determination. In 2009, he failed to make it to university, but this setback didn't deter his ambition. Initially, he used locally available material to build prototypes until he perfected his design. He now outsources production for his tracker to China. Today, his company is worth more than $100,000 and boasts of a client base of more than 100 companies. Tony Wanga is one of Macharia's clients. He has three minibus taxis in a city where the public transportation sector has been the biggest target of car thieves. He bought three truckers for $250 each.
As an investor, you need to ensure that your asset is safe. So how safe? You have to ensure that it's insured, and at the same time, a tracker is installed. Once a tracker is installed, you can easily do your work from the safety of the office. You can track your vehicle, know where it is, real time. So it's so practicable.
Macharia continues to develop better security products. His latest innovation is a wireless CCTV device he claims is tamper-proof. The wireless security camera seeks to offer more robust surveillance by eliminating cables and storing data for longer periods. Macharia hopes his innovations offer his clients peace of mind from random crimes. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz. Turn in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next is our VOA editorial. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Greg Burns, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A large and growing body of evidence leaves little doubt that when women participate in the formal marketplace, the economic strength and competitiveness of the entire country rise. Women are an enormous untapped resource for struggling economies, yet all too frequently, women cannot access banking services or business and entrepreneurial education. They cannot access markets. Some countries do not allow women to inherit and even restrict women from working in certain industries or getting a job without the permission of a male relative. Such barriers are very costly, said Secretary of State John Kerry. The Asia-Pacific region loses some $89 billion a year from the restrictions on women's participation in the economy. And that is very striking when you consider that narrowing the gender gap in some emerging economies could boost gross domestic product in those economies by at least 10%. Speaking on the margins of the 2014 APEC CEO Summit in Beijing, Secretary Kerry announced two new initiatives that will help advance women's economic participation throughout the region. First, the APEC Women and the Economy Dashboard will measure APEC's progress in improving women's economic participation by tracking 75 critical indicators on women's ability to participate in society, their economic success, such as participation in the labor force, financial literacy, and educational attainment. The dashboard will set a clear benchmark for women's participation in the economy, monitoring progress, and supporting economies in their effort to get women into positions in business where they are leading and able to inspire and be role models for future generations, said Secretary Kerry. And second, the Secretary announced a Women's Entrepreneurship in APEC, or We APEC Network. This cross-cutting regional initiative will aim to identify and connect women's entrepreneurship networks in each economy with public and private sector support services and global supply chains to ultimately expand economic opportunities and regional trade. As we all know, Secretary Kerry stated, capital chases confidence and opportunity together, and these will help provide both. There are too many countries where women are sidelined, literally, and grotesquely in some places, he said. The simple reality is no team can win with half its players on the bench.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Sunday Shomari. Next on Let's Talk Witchcraft. Witchcraft is a topic we'll discuss in our new lighthearted show, Let's Talk. So join me, Sunday Shomari, and my guests as we explore witchcraft with some hilarity. That's Let's Talk, Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.